Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.
This is Rebecca Turner, and thank you for listening to the Good Things Podcast here on Super Talk Mississippi.
It's Mississippi's Radio Happy Hour.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
You're listening to Good Things with Rebecca Turner.
Well, I'm going to Mississippi. Mississippi, here I come.
Bringing you the good stories of Mississippi's people, places, and things to do. Now, here's Rebecca.
Good afternoon, Super Talk Mississippi. You're tuned into your Radio Happy Hour. That's the Good Things. I'm your host, Rebecca Turner. Now, don't forget, you can listen to Good Things. We are streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Super Talk Mississippi app. We hope you have downloaded that. You can always find us on your local Super Talk Mississippi radio station, but don't forget to watch us. We are on your computer, your mobile device. Just head on over to Super Talk TV. And if you're looking for a good read for the beach this summer, or maybe you're going on vacation, or heck, maybe you just want to escape to your back porch and read something light but lovable, we've got that for you. When the Ocean Roars is the title of the book, and the author is with us today, Charles C. Estes. She is from Brookhaven, Mississippi, and she's a debut author, and she's excited about her launch. So welcome.
Thank you so much. I'm so glad to be here.
I'm happy to have you here. I also am happy to help those debut authors because it's tough, right? Like, it's tough when you have something in your head that you feel like needs to get on paper and then to get it out into the world for the world to read. Even if the world loves it, sometimes it's hard just to let folks know that there's new things sort of out there. But let's start with just explaining the book to us. So, When the Ocean Roars, who would be like the perfect reader for this?
I think, so it's a Christian contemporary mm-hmm. romance, but I think it's definitely a crossover book. I've had all kinds of readers who have enjoyed the book, but especially new adult women, kind of 18 to 30, but women of all ages, and I've even had some men that have been interested. Yeah. It's a story about a young man who has had a rough upbringing, mm-hmm. and he ends up in a profession that he is a professional prize fighter.
Yes.
And so that storyline has been really appealing to men mm-hmm. as well.
Where did this story find you, Charles C? Because I know we all get inspiration somewhere, and obviously we all have got these wonderful ideas in our head if you're an author or creative that way. How did this particular storyline or these particular characters come creeping into your imagination, and you thought, man, they've got to get on paper. We've got to introduce them to the world.
So the ideas were, it was sort of a convergence of a lot of ideas. It's really a story. Years ago, I actually had the idea years ago, and it's a story about just human struggle and triumph over human struggle. I don't want to spoil the book, but there was a real event that really weighed heavy on my heart. The sort of event that would stop you in your tracks. And so...
Like in the headlines or in your own personal life?
Like in the headlines. And so it's sort of a story. At that time, you know, I think everybody has some fighter in them. We mm-hmm. all have our struggles. And so it's a story about a fighter. Very allegorically, it's about a fighter who is overseas for a world championship, and he ends up facing a battle that he never expected to fight. But I had seen so many of my friends struggling with, you know, the loss of a child, cancer, those sorts of things. And it's really easy for momentary little inconveniences and distractions to, you know, bog us down. Mm-hmm. But there are things that happen in life that really put things in perspective. And so it's a story about that. It is set in Japan, which is kind of a unique read. It is a
Are you people, familiar with that area?
I am. So when I was in college, my background's in international finance. I studied international finance, and I worked overseas for a long time with a Fortune 500 company. I did a lot of traveling. But when I was in college, I actually studied in Japan for the better part of a year. And it made a lot of sense for this setting. And so I felt like I've been blessed to see some other things. Yeah. And it was a different location that met, you know, fit the book well as a setting. And you know, I spent a lot of time on description, so it's not real heavy on description, but it does take people to another place and gives you a real taste of sort of the culture and the setting and the scenes.
And that's what a lot of people look for in terms of book anyway. You want to escape, you want to be inspired, but you also want to be entertained. Right. And it's also, you know, that time-honored love story that you sort of mentioned. Yes. So you called it Christian Contemporary.
Yes.
And so that was very intentional for you. What did you feel like in terms of the space of stories about love or romance that maybe lack in there for some readers?
I just think that I'm not sure if I understand the question, but
meaning was the intentionality going for Christian contemporary versus just going traditional love story?
I think it is a traditional love story, but it definitely has some bigger questions in it that follow sort of the Christian follow a religious arc. And so I wanted something, you know, when big things happen, sometimes, you know, if you're Christian, you know, you do battle on your knees. Sometimes there's some things we can't fight ourselves. And so it definitely has that sort of theme in it.
Which I think people can also connect with, too. But I think also it's a PG love story, I think, is where I was going with it.
It is.
For folks who like that kind of story but don't want to read what they don't want to see.
It's low spice, but it definitely has some heat in it. I don't think romance readers will be disappointed.
Yeah.
It definitely has. It's a little forbidden love, but it definitely is closed door.
Is missing in not only like television and all entertainment is this idea that you can have, you know, you still get the story through, still get the passion through, still
yes.
get the point through, and you don't have to do it with what you don't want to, like, you wouldn't want to see in someone's private
bedroom. Well, and this is, it's a story about a fighter, and he's very much an alpha guy. You know, he's very attractive, he's kind of in the prime of his life, and part of his battle is the flesh. And, you know, you kind of feel that tension back and forth in the story.
What made you think, Charles Lee, like, I got to get this out now? You're a debut author. I know you're a busy mom. You've obviously had a phenomenal career. Like, why now? Why did you think at this stage in your life, this was the perfect timing to set When the Ocean Roars out for everybody?
You know, some of that's not in my hands. It was traditionally published by Iron Stream Media, and I really am grateful for them for believing me in this book. So I wrote this book a couple years ago, and I put it aside, and I let it sit, and I kept writing. When I first started writing, I really didn't have, I felt led to write, but I did not feel, I wasn't really writing for other people. It was almost anxiety therapy for myself. But I finished one book, then I finished another book, and I didn't know what to do with them. And so I started entering my books in contests, and the books did really well in contests. So, like you said, when you write, you don't always know how people will receive it.
Mm-hmm.
That was a good gauge for me to see, did people like it? What was the feedback? And, you know, I was developing my craft as well at that time. And so I worked really hard on the book and polished it. I stopped working several years ago to be home and be more flexible with my kids. And when I did that, I picked up the books, cleaned it up, and I took it to a conference. This book actually was an American Christian Fiction Writers Genesis finalist last year, which is a national award. So that was great. And it actually hit number one on Amazon yesterday.
Fantastic. Because didn't you debut yesterday?
It debuted yesterday. Yes. So that was huge. It's in the Christian romance category. But like I said, it's a good... In full disclaimer, you know, it does have some faith-based elements, but and some readers want to avoid that, but some don't mind that.
And embrace that.
It's definitely a crossover.
And Pamela N. Biloxi, she's asking us what the name of the book is. You just turned in. Hey, Pam, it's When the Ocean Roars. It is a novel by Chelsea Estes.
Yes.
And so When the Ocean Roars, can you give a little behind the title, or does that give too much away of the book?
Yeah, it does give a lot away about the book, but I will say this. So if I can get to it, there is a theme verse, and it really comes from this, and it's if you read the book, it definitely sets the stage. But Psalm 46, 1 through 3 talks about that God is our refuge and strength, you know, a helper who is always found in times of trouble. When the ocean, it goes on and it talks about the oceans roaring and the mountains toppling. So it came from that.
If folks want to snag the book, where do they get it?
So it's on Amazon. It is on, you can order it from Barnes & Noble website. I have dropped some copies off. If you're in Jackson, at Lemuria, Impressions Books out in Flowood, in Brookhaven, Hall & Company will have it, After 5 Design, and there are going to be some other locations. So follow my website, and you'll see all of the locations, christianbook.com.
All righty, we'll stick with this. We've got more for you coming up next.
For all your glass.
Making your afternoon just a little brighter. It's Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi.
Welcome back to Good Things, streaming live over at supertalk.fm. We're also streaming from that Supertalk Mississippi app. We do hope you have downloaded that. You can always find us, too, on your local Supertalk Mississippi radio station. But don't forget to watch us. We are on your computer or your mobile device. Just head on over to Supertalk TV. And the Thunder and Lightning Catfish Tour, which is presented by Superior Catfish, is back as Brian Haydad and Robbie Falk of the Thunder and Lightning podcast. They're going to trek around the state to catfish houses to talk food and, of course, bulldog sports. And so you can catch the show anywhere you listen to podcasts and watch the episodes on Supertalk Mississippi's YouTube channel. And for generations, Superior Catfish has cultivated fresh, delicious catfish, and they've perfected a process to ensure you receive the finest product available. So remember, always ask for Superior Catfish at your favorite grocer and restaurant. And I heard Paul and Lance this morning asking why they didn't get to go around the state and do their show at food places, which I thought was a great idea. I wonder, like, if we had to pick, what would we go around and do good things from? Like, catfish is very specific. They're going to different catfish places because obviously there's a theme there. You know me, Rhino, I would go on a Bloody Mary tour of the state of Mississippi in a heartbeat. However, I don't know if that would really jive with being on air and sort of working. I don't know the regulations around that.
I think it's frowned upon.
It's probably frowned upon, which is so sad. I mean, there's like...
Think about how much funnier good things could be.
That's not...
If there were a 3-drink minimum.
Whoa! I think you can just do like a maximum. That would be like a that way. But no, I think you could do lots of tours. I think you could. I know Hattiesburg has its hamburger one that you could take. You could do that's just in the city of the around the surrounding Pine Belt. You could do a catfish one, like
pizza.
Really? So that's kind of.
I feel like you could pull it off. It. There are, of course, the chains that are all over the place, but. Mm-hmm. I feel like if you looked hard enough, you could find some places selling some pretty darn good pizza in the Magnolia State.
That's true. Kind of take it off, like, and everybody would do it different from the way they do their dough to the toppings. And we're not talking about your chain pizza places, again, like with Superior Catfish. We're talking about those mom-and-pop places that also have the pizza on the menu that everybody sort of enjoys. I could be down for that. That would be one. Tour farmers markets, you know, I'd be down for that. That would be a lot of fun as well to go around and do. Fried catfish, I wouldn't be mad at that one. That would be, you know, you say, because you think about it, you're like, oh, if you've had one catfish plate, you've had all of them. And then the boys will tell you, absolutely not. Like, mm-hmm. That will be, they are not all created equal, and sort of same with the other staples. And, you know, because, well, we're a little bit of afternoon, so I was trying to think of, like, the time. St. Paul, and then they could do breakfast places, like breakfast places that have breakfast. And then I was thinking, oh, we could do Blue Plate specials, because that would be a lot of fun, too. But usually it's wrapped up and put away by 2 o'clock.
Yeah, it's usually
about we should totally be happy hour. I'm getting it back there. I'm making my case. I'm going to go in strong with the idea, and then, yeah, it probably get completely shot down. But anyway, all that to say, lots of fun. They're going to be on the road for that. I think Thunder and Lightning also comes up tonight at 6 after the live version here on Super Talk after Sports Talk Mississippi. So they're up to a lot of good. If there was enough options of peanut butter cookies around the state, Rhino, I know you would be up for a peanut butter cookie tour.
Oh, yeah. I would ride a bicycle around the state to get peanut butter cookies.
What is your, remind me that. What is your...
I have an affinity for peanut butter. And peanut butter cookies were the first cookie, really the first anything I got to cook with Mom. Where she let us in there, into the kitchen, helped stir the dough, make the balls out of the cookie dough, put them on the cookie sheet, get the fork and make the little crisscross on it, like all the little steps. That was the first time we were allowed, myself and my little brother were allowed into the kitchen to help Mom. So I've always loved peanut butter cookies.
Does somebody, other than your mom's recipe and those memories, do you have like somewhere that makes a good peanut butter cookie? Because not all assorted cookies have peanut butter cookies in them.
It's
not one, like almost two when you find one, and you kind of have to hold it to high standards, because if it is dry, it's not good. So you want that like moist, like, you know, that still has sort of the bend to it. But
I got two
it's good,
that are mom and pop and two that are chain stores, because the mom and pop is going to be a little harder to get to. If it's still open, I haven't been back in a while, so I need to remedy that. Mimi's Bakery in Clinton had amazing peanut butter cookies. So that's one for the mom and pop side. On the you could probably buy it anywhere side, Subway's peanut butter cookies aren't bad. They're probably the best cookie they sell. And I'm a fan of the white chocolate chip macadamia nut, but the peanut butter cookie is the best one they sell.
I am the person who stands there deciding my life choices when there's the assorted cookie. I usually don't go for chocolate chip unless that's the only thing, because it's so, like, everywhere. Like, you can get a chocolate chip cookie and just any... If there's going to be cookies, there's going to be chocolate chip. If it comes down to the peanut butter cookie or the macadamia, I literally am standing there like, what do I do with my life? Which one do I need today? Because they both have that kind of same soft, different mouthfeel than a traditional cookie would have. But the macadamia one does have that just little gift, especially if there's like big ones. In there, sometimes it will sway me, but I do like a peanut butter cookie.
You said big ones. That made me think of the Great American Cookie Company.
And they have big ones.
They have the big peanut butter cookies, and those are great.
Or the little bitty ones. Like, did your mom make them like medium size, or did she make them little?
They were about medium size, yeah. They weren't really little, but they weren't as big as like the Great American Cookie Company.
Jeff in Pontotoc has an idea that I feel like one of our Main Street associations listening to Good Things should pick up on. If you're looking for a new event to have that we could help promote for you next year, it's this time of year there should be a fried pie festival. That is like genius, Jeff.
Oh, yeah.
Because right now, name a fruit that's great and pie that's not really in season right now. Because you got, like, apples are in season, peaches are in season, berries are in season, blackberries are in season. What am I missing? Cherries are in season. I'm sure I'm missing something. I mean, they can't all be in season. I don't know if you do plum pie.
I don't think chocolate has a season.
Chocolate didn't have a season. Would you fry that?
I've had fried chocolate pies.
What? Is that a s'more?
No, you don't have marshmallow.
Does it taste like a s'more without a marshmallow? Could you add a marshmallow and make it a s'more pie?
I guess you could add a marshmallow and make it a s'more pie, but it tastes more like not a chocolate chess pie, because there's a richness to that. It's more like a just chocolate pie. But instead of being in a crust, it's folded over and fried.
Oh, Debbie from Ocean Springs, pumpkin pie. Okay. But sweet potato. They're not really, there's not their prime season, but you can absolutely find them right now in your farmer's market. But chocolate is the best. Fried? Would you have that fried? I don't know.
If you can get your hands on it, give it a try.
But I'm thinking, like, you know, you get the little fried apple pies from, is it McDonald's? It's McDonald's.
Well, yeah, they just have the hot apple pie, yeah.
But
they still fry them? I think they quit frying them.
I think they
quit
frying them. But that in my mind, like, and when Jeff brought that up, I don't see like a whole pie being dunked in grease, although that would be interesting and entertaining and probably dangerous.
Sounds like something you would get at the fair.
Yes, but I am thinking like those.
Looks like a
hot pocket style.
Yeah, like a popover, or not a popover, a turnover.
Turnover? It's not a tart, because a tart's tart, something different.
Tart's got the open top.
Yes, correct. So that would not work. Frying it. Would you do it on a pie on a stick? Would you put it on a stick?
Some of the messier fillings, you probably could use it on a stick. Like you get into the cherry fillings or the blueberry filling or something where there's not quite as much holding it together. And once you get the opening of it big enough, yeah, it'll fall out on you.
While we're giving the Mississippi Main Street people something else to add to their calendar to do, bring back cakewalks. Like, what's the last time you've seen a cakewalk or they called it pie, or is it a cake and pie walk or whatever, but I think you'd remember like a cakewalk. I remember those as a kid. Every event that you went to or something at church or whatever it would be, there was going to be a cakewalk.
I feel like that's because the older we get, the more society tends to make events and parties catered more and more to younger and younger people. Whereas our parents got to grow up in a point in a day and age where you kind of had two different parties. You had the kid party and the adult party. And cakewalks, like I remember going to, say, the fall festival in elementary school. I wanted to go do the little throw the clothespin over the wall and catch candy like it's fishing. I didn't want to go walk around in a circle to win a cake. But now as an adult, I have no interest in throwing a clothesline over the thing to catch candy. But if I got a chance to win a cake and all I got to do is go in a circle, I'm going in there and going cakewalk.
I just brought up lots of memories and also probably a lot of anger. I should have gotten that double chocolate cake. Lisa reminds us the strawberries are out of season now. So that would be one that wouldn't be the freshest pie. But Jeff, I'm with you. I think somebody should take it and run with it for next year. But stick with us. We got more for you coming up next.
Beat, positive, and stories that make you smile. This is Good Things with Rebecca Turner on Super Talk Mississippi, the Super Talk app, and at supertalk.fm.
There's a time in my life right now, every word of it, and I would. I've lost some of the words over the years. But that breath, man. You'd be in your car and be like, and then go back and forth. What year is this?
I'm going to guess 97. I'll double check though.
Just took me straight back to my younger days, early driving days.
Yep, released 1997.
I was trying to think, when did I start driving? It had to be around then, if I graduated. And
apparently it was originally released in Australia in 1996.
There you go, they just don't make music like they used to. You know, listen to me sounding like our grandparents and everybody else did. But I saw a meme that I sent to you the other day, Rhino, and it just said, I know why this generation is so angry. They have terrible music. And it's like, everybody listening to Good Things is like, yes. Yes, they do. Because most of us, unless you're 20 or younger, welcome to Good Things. Then we're talking about your music. So we're all talking about somebody else's. Like, yeah, and they probably thought the same thing about ours.
You listen to modern music and every once in a while a song will come out and you go, all right, I can see somebody listening to that in 10 years' time. But even then, it's like, 20, 30 years from now, they're not going to listen to that. Whereas we're still listening to stuff from the 30s, 40s, 50s, 60s, mm-hmm. like all the way up to now.
It's definitely the 70s and 80s
the
and
last
90s.
Decade or so of music has just been.
I guess continuing to push the boundaries. I think that's a little bit where some of the technology and the AI, like when I say scares me, that's not. I'm not being dramatic, like, makes me sad for the craft of music. Not like there are worse things to worry about than AI ruining someone's, you know, being able to produce music. But it just makes me a little sad that you don't still have that same kind of craft that you had to have back, you know, the 50s, the 60s, the 70s, the 80s.
And in fairness, there were some off-the-wall oddball trends in the 90s. Like,
oh, for sure. It feels like more of it lasted.
Was it 93 or 94 where for about 3 or 4 months there in the middle of the summertime, Gregorian chant was all the rage.
What?
The dudes and the monks going, E-A-I-C-O, dude, like that. That was the
that
cool
made,
thing.
And that made it on the radio?
Oh, yeah. It was like number one or two on the Billboard.
I don't remember that, which is probably why I don't remember that at all. But the things that you do remember, it just feels like some generations have had more staying power when it came to their art. But I think you'll also realize, you'll start to see, and there's always like the pendulum swings one way. I think it's also going to swing back too for photography. I think that's another art that has gotten overshadowed with better cameras, with automatic filters, with all of these certain like AIs kind of come in and done it a disservice. But true picture taking, like, you can't just filter it to something good. Like,
yeah,
you have
composing the shot itself is a skill that no amount of AI or fancy cameras can fix for you.
Right. And but it just as if we go in one direction really far, we tend to recognize it and sort of course correct just a little bit. Like, even the young musician that we had on Good Things, the guitarist from Tupelo that came and joined us, and his name is skipping me, but his EP is coming out on vinyl. I mean, he wasn't old. He's 13. He wasn't
even around when vinyl went out of fashion.
But he's recognizing, and his team's recognizing, that the type of music that they're playing, people are starting to gravitate back towards the simpler way of sort of listening thing, or it being a complete different experience than just streaming it from something or just doing whatever. You know, I like my History Channel, and I like watching the different things that built America, and I landed on the one, the brands, and of course it was about Apple versus Microsoft, and man, it's just, regardless of what you think, going back to like see how Bill Gates and
Steve Jobs,
thank you. I was drowning. How they, the two of them, and obviously everybody that worked with them, but the two of them kind of really spearheaded like the computer growth. And as we look at like how technology's growing so fast now, it feels like we can't keep up. I mean, I wasn't buying computers back when they first came out, but they were improving kind of like the smartphone did for like year in. And what'd you do with those big things? Like, if you bought the latest, what it was, Apple II, I think they called it at one time, or whatever it may be.
And because you had the Apple II and the Lisa were competing underneath the umbrella of Apple, and that was one of the reasons Apple said, hey, Steve, go do something else for a while. You're driving us crazy, because you got the team that's working on Apple II and the team that's working on Lisa, and they're literally at each other's throats, and they're all supposed to be working for the same company.
Right. But, I mean, that was an investment. Yes, I know the little thing that you hold in your hand is an investment, but, like, now that investment's, like, tied into your phone bill, and it's really easy to, like, I don't know, think you're always going to pay $30 a month for the rest of your life for the new phone in your hand. They make it a little – back then, you had to go pay $1,600, $2,000 for this big thing that took half your desk, and then within, what, 12, 16 months –
That
was an upgrade that wasn't just a, hey,
it was
run
considered
your
completely obsolete.
Yes, considered complete. Like, I can't imagine trying to keep up with the technology. And then eventually you get to a point where your computers just update overnight. There's less of that and sort of all that. But being in that sort of height, I wonder how folks felt about technology and computers and sort of all that then.
There was a decent push like you're seeing nowadays with AI, where there's there's people that have different ideas that they could take the technology in different directions and solve different problems. And some of those really did gangbusters and took off, and we're still using them today. Like the idea of the internet not being something for academics to send papers back and forth to each other or to share research data sets. The idea that the internet is something that could connect everyone was a relatively novel concept at the time you were talking about. So that's one where they had the idea, several people had their input on it, and the outcome is what you see now. Compare that to in that same time period, you had a lot of big ideas about what computers could do, but it didn't quite have the power, the memory, the space, the ability to pull it off, like virtual reality. You're seeing virtual reality now that computers have had 20, 30 years to improve to the point where they can do what was asked of them. But you go back to the late 80s, early 90s, you had people trying to come up with and implement virtual reality with the computers of the time. That was a tall task, and it didn't quite take off the way they thought it would. So there's winners and losers. The internet was a big winner. Virtual reality was a loser for a long time.
It's like it just had to sit and wait its turn. Of course, again, I wasn't around whenever you guys all started buying computers for the first time, but I can't believe that for one of the first computers, you had to provide your own monitor, which people like hooked up to like TVs. And I say computer loosely, I think it did whatever, and you had to do all the coding and sort of all that. It's just mind-boggling how far that technology has come in, you know, just a few short decades, and how our lives would be completely different if Steve Jobs would have went into, I don't know, whatever else.
Well, I mean, look at it this way. You love talking about space. You love learning about space. The computers on the Apollo missions that sent men to the moon have less computing power than probably the majority of calculators nowadays.
Wow. That's intense. Still not going. As much as I want to see it. I'm not saying there's not a perfect lineup on what would get me to get in a rocket and actually go to space, but it's a short list as much as, like, I kind of just want to keep it where it's at.
So you're saying you're not signing up for the new centrifugal force system where they get you in a thing and just spin you around real fast and then fling you.
Into the air?
Oh, yeah.
You don't with have to, a parachute?
You don't have to worry about a rocket. We're just going to get you up to speed and chuck you.
But then won't at a certain, like, wouldn't you, like, blow up? Not blow up, but, like, impact? Like,
well, they're
you
designing it to be big enough to hold, like, the capsule that would be on the top of a rocket, but instead be attached to this big spinny thing.
That reminds me of the meme I saw of an excavator that was sitting on something wet and paper, and it was spinning around in circles, and a girl was clearly had too many Bloody Marys and was going around in circles really fast, and I was just waiting for her to let go and meet Jesus. And so I feel like that would be as dumb as being talked into letting a piece of heavy machinery twirl you around too for a good time.
Well, I mean, to get I'll to space, you've got to get to a certain speed and a certain point. How you get to that speed and how you get to that point is really why we've stuck with rockets for so long, because that's really the only technology we have to do it. But if they can just take you out to a building that's going to spin it up and then shoot you to space without the worry about blowing up, maybe.
What if it doesn't aim right? And you go impelling into the side of a mountain.
Or you just go visit Mars.
Oh, wow, I didn't think about that. Like, once you get going, there's no, like, is there a steering wheel in there?
There's a little bit more math involved, but, yeah.
That would be my luck. It would be successful, but I go in a completely different opposite direction in space. Stick with us. More good things up next.
Rebecca Turner.
She's smart and pretty.
Good Things with Rebecca Turner continues on Super Talk Mississippi.
Yes.
See where it'd be relaxing. I still don't remember it playing on the radio. But was it kind of like intertwined into popular music in the 90s, or was like this on the radio?
I had a bit of influence on pop music in the 90s because there were several songs by mainstream artists that included pieces of Gregorian chant. Like, I think somebody on the text line chimed in with Jars of Clay. Where was that? But somebody said Jars of Clay included. I remember that one. I think Madonna had some music that had it in there.
Two polar opposites there.
Oh, yeah. All over the place.
I mean, I can see where it could have its place. I also can see where it could be very relaxing in the right setting.
That's the funniest part about it is because the recordings of the Benedictine monks of Santo Domingo de Silos were recorded as early as the 1970s. It's like from 1970 to the early to mid-80s is when they were recorded.
Mm-hmm.
But then they released it in 94, quote, marketed as an antidote to the stress of modern life.
Take me back to the stress of 94. I don't know where that came from.
It went up to number 3 on the Billboard 200 and certified as double platinum, meaning they sold 2 million copies.
That's because folks didn't need... Maybe was that when all the screaming took off? When people like heavy metal, like really screaming angry music? Was this like kind of the counteract to that?
Kinda.
Which I still find fascinating that, number one, that's what people enjoy, like just jamming out to and listening someone scream at you. And number two, that there's people who can do that, like hold those notes and like hang in there with just screaming. And then I just need to be in the studio for like when you stop recording and your producer's like,
"Aw. Yeah, it was Dan in Hattiesburg said Jars of Clay.
You need to scream a little different. You need to scream a little harder. Like your kid spilt something on a new carpet, like that kind of, I don't know. We all have our different tastes and styles. For me, that really angry sort of screaming, that's not. But, and then the other route, like that would put me to sleep. I would be like real zen and before it was all over with.
I feel like that was the precursor to Pure Moods.
Yeah, let's not bring that back. Let's find a happy medium somewhere. somewhere in the middle. If you're looking for at least happy headlines, you can find those over on the Good Things Facebook group. I saw one that I thought was just, I shared one that I thought was just really sweet. A local butcher here, at least in the metro area, his name's Benny Malone. He donated a batch of smoked bones, so they were not cooked bones, so they don't splinter, to the dogs of the Animal Rescue Fund, ARF is known around here. His butcher shop is called Redemption Meat, and he definitely made all the dogs' tails wag and filled up their bellies with this thoughtful donation. And so I don't know why it caught me off guard in that way. And since, I mean, people make donations to the animal shelters all the time, but I thought, man, here's a guy who probably has a real niche and saw an opportunity to bring joy to another little niche that often goes overlooked in the way that you can kind of do that. And kudos to him for recognizing that he had something that would bring lots of joy to those doggies there. And so they look really happy if you want to go over and share that. I mean, what dog wouldn't want a nice smoked bone if they had to be waiting for adoption in that way? Dustin from Walnut says, definitely a Pure Moods band, I think.
Enya,
and a lot of
Gregorian. Was it Enya that
chants.
Did Sail Away?
Sail away, sail away, oh, sail yeah. away. Okay, so that's how they kind of like tied it into
easy
there.
Easy listening. The kind of stuff that if you fell asleep and left the TV on, you'd wake up at 2 in the morning and it was either going to be, warning, this content not suitable for children, or it was going to be, sail away, sail away. And yeah.
One of those two.
Yeah.
Bring it back. Could you imagine, like, talking about back in time, if your TV actually...
Yeah, did the national anthem, and then, that's it, folks. Static.
But, no, it's 24 hours of something now. Debbie from Ocean Springs, I saw where you said strawberry pie. I had never heard of it either, but yes, usually people make strawberries for tarts. but you can make strawberry pie. But my quick Google education told me that if you try it for the first time, it may end up soggy because they tend to hold a lot of water. So if you're up for making a strawberry pie, just know, I don't know how you make it unsoggy, but Google has all the information you need to know. But sign me up.
I can honestly say I've never had a strawberry pie made in the same vein as an apple pie or a cherry pie or something like that. But when you get the recipe, if it's got Cool Whip and the evaporated milk and the lemon juice and the fresh strawberries and it's no bake, you find that recipe, make it. It's delicious.
Make it. All right, stick with this. We got more for you up next. You got the boys with Sports Talk from 3 to 6. Rhino and I'll meet you back here tomorrow at 2. But until then, I hope you all find time for the good things.
Good things for you. Good things for you.
Super Talk Mississippi Media Production.